Thanks, Elaine. Right, great to be back with you. The intimacy deficit, filling the hole in our lives. And just a reminder of our working definition, a really broad definition of intimacy, wholeness through connection in a whole variety of different contexts. We can whiz through these opening slides now, can we? Sort of, we're all on the sort of, well, hopefully getting on the same page. We focused in particular on this intimacy quadrant. So Monday we talked about intimacy with God, Tuesday intimacy with yourself, yesterday intimacy with others, and yes, today intimacy with creation. These aren't sequential, these aren't independent of each other, actually they're interdependent. And if you really want to fill the intimacy deficit in your life, you need to be working on all of them at the same time. And just to sort of illustrate that, I was just thinking last night in the evening celebration of how just the experience of being connected with other people in worshipping God together, which is one of the great experiences, isn't it, of the Keswick Convention, it's just been so good for my intimacy with God. And I hope you find that when you're here, but also as you worship with God's people in your local church context. Intimacy with others, breeding intimacy with God, all of these interconnected and bolstering each other as we seek to do as much as possible, all of them at the same time. This is the sort of the task set for us this morning, filling the intimacy deficit by enjoying creation. To be satisfied in life, we need to feel connected to, at one with creation. Why don't we? How can we better enjoy God's creation and human creativity? How are you involved in making people and making things? Intimacy with creation defined. What are we talking about this morning? As we've gone through our sort of various categories, perhaps intimacy with God was relatively easy to get our minds around. Intimacy with others, relatively easy to get our minds around. Intimacy with yourself and intimacy with creation perhaps need have taken a little bit more work to get our hearts and minds around exactly what we're talking about. And I think we're talking about this. Intimacy with creation defined would be beauty appreciation and beauty creation. Beauty appreciation and beauty creation. And to sort of flesh that out a bit, I just want to sort of help you see or help you grasp how this has been working out in my life in recent months. And we have here two pictures that will hopefully help us. First of all, beauty appreciation. And the picture of the beach and the sun at sunrise are a picture that I took about a month or two ago on the beautiful Channel Island of Herm. And I was doing some beauty appreciation. I go to Herm, which is one of my favorite places, one of the most beautiful place on the planet. I go there 2 weeks every May, and usually I get up one or two mornings while I'm staying there and I watch the sunrise. And it is incredibly beautiful to be there as you see the sun just beginning to sort of peep above the horizon. And then you see it just begin to slowly mount up the sky. And then you have, you can't really capture it on a camera, then you have just the wonderful moment when the whole sea goes golden because the sun on the horizon is casting its light. Can I point out the footprints on this photo? That is the evidence that I was stupid enough to go in the sea at 6 o'clock on a May morning in the English Channel. I did survive the experience. I'm here to prove that. But there was a moment when I thought I might not. But it was, and it is, that sort of almost a sort of entry into the beauty of creation, such a powerful thing, to be praising God, to be enjoying his creation, to be literally sort of united with it as I was swimming around in a golden sea. That's what we're talking about, beauty appreciation. But intimacy with creation is not just appreciating creation, it's also about beauty creation. Now, you know, I could, if I was a parent, put a picture of a child, of something beautiful I've created. I could, if I was an artist, have put a picture of a picture I've painted or drawn. And I did recently sign up for some architectural art classes that went disastrously wrong, so I didn't decide not to share any of that with you. Instead, what I have put up is the book I've written, because that is something I have created recently. I'm hoping there are aspects of beauty in it, in its contents, but it was also just a beautiful creativity project to be involved in, working with a publisher, working with copywriters, working with an artist who did the cover, working with people who were giving me feedback. All those things were just a beautiful act of creativity alongside other people. And so if I was to point to something I have created that is hopefully beautiful in recent months, it would be that book. I wonder what the examples of beauty appreciation and beauty creation might be from your life in recent months. I hope you're beginning to think of things. I hope by the end of our session, you'll be able to think, yeah, that's what I was doing then. That's what I do. I was appreciating beauty. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm creating beauty in that area of my life. But hopefully that begins to give you a sense of what we're focusing on this morning. Beauty appreciation, beauty creation. Let's try and find some sort of biblical sort of backing for this. Again, by going to the bookends of the Bible and right to the beginning, right to the end, those times when we see human life lived as it's meant to be lived. What does enjoying intimacy with creation look like right at the beginning? Well, I hope these words are really familiar to you. At the first commandment, our Creator God gives us his creatures. God blessed them, that's Adam and Eve, and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. At the first instruction that God gave us was to get on and create beauty. It was an instruction to have children. It was an instruction to be involved in, taking the lead in, creation care. Right at the beginning, God gave us that job of enjoying an intimate relationship with creation. And it's really important, I think, for us to understand that first instruction, that first commandment, has not been taken away. It is still the job that God has given humanity, of being involved as his image bearers in looking after, ruling over, caring for his creation. So intimacy with creation means just basically getting on and doing what God told us to do right at the beginning. And then I love how the Bible ends with a picture, doesn't it, of the new heavens and the new earth. And there's loads of sort of details given in Revelation 21 of what that would be like. And what I particularly sort of enjoy sort of reflecting on are just some of the sort of little hints we get as to what will continue from this earth and what won't continue from this earth. So famously, beginning of Revelation 21, wonderfully, there won't be a continuation of death and mourning and crying and pain. But towards the end of chapter 1, we do get a sense that there might be some continuity in some of the things that we enjoy in the new creation. Just listen to these words from the end of Revelation 21. John writes, I did not see a temple in the city because the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives its light, and the Lamb is its light. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. On no days would its gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. Exactly what some of this language means, we don't know, but I love the idea that some of what has most glorified God in the here and now, some of the beauty that has been created in the here and now, in this present world, that some of it may well survive into the world to come. Be part of the beauty that God's people enjoy forever in God's new perfect world. So part of me likes just playing with the idea of listening to Supertramp whilst reading The Lord of the Rings and having some blue bottle gin and tonic in one hand in the new creation. Part of what human beings have created in the here and now that lasts into our wonderful future. I think too often we sometimes have this sense that this world is just going to be destroyed, it's just going to burn, when I think there are hints in Scripture that actually we should expect a degree of continuity between this wonderful creation that God's given us and the new creation, the wonderful new creation that we'll enjoy. If you want to explore those ideas, it might be quite new to you, the book that I would recommend is one by Bishop Tom Wright called By Surprised by Hope. And I found it personally very liberating, particularly when it comes to this whole area of intimacy with creation and how much we should be investing in appreciating and creating beauty in the here and now. Listening to what he says. What you do in the Lord is not in vain. You're not oiling the wheels of a machine that is about to fall over a cliff. You're not restoring a great painting that's shortly going to be thrown on the fire. You're not planting roses in a garden that's about to be dug up for a building site. You are, strange though it might seem, almost as hard to believe as the resurrection itself, accomplishing something that will become, in due course, part of God's new world. Now that idea is sort of a little bit of a hand grenade this morning. If you're thinking, oh my goodness, there's loads I want to think through, loads of questions I've got. We've obviously got a question time. But also, do get hold of Tom Wright's book and read into what he's saying. I found it incredibly helpful. You might find it incredibly helpful too. Back on sort of the main track. What stops you from enjoying intimacy with creation? What are the things that stop you from enjoying, appreciating beauty in creation? What stops you from making beauty, creating beauty in your daily life? What are the human blockers in play? Well, here are a couple when it comes to not appreciating beauty, and they're very personal for me, and they may be yours, they may not be. Busyness is one of the big things that stops me from appreciating beauty. And sadly, a great example of that is that I have been in Keswick this week and I have not got out and about in the Lake District. I've not walked down to Derwent Water. I've walked nowhere apart from basically here and booze. I'm sorry to have to confess. Okay, that is it. I've been working around sort of these seminars, and it's been a mistake because it's meant that I haven't had the opportunity to appreciate the beauty of God that we see all around us in a place like Keswick, the heart of the Lake District. Now, the good news is that I'm back for week three, so I'm going to have an opportunity to do it then. But I think one of the consistent blockers for me in appreciating beauty is just being driven by my to-do list and not walking around the parks in my city or not just taking the time to enjoy some of the beautiful objects or books or music that I have in my house. So busyness, I think, for me and perhaps for you, can be one of the things that hinders me, that stops me from appreciating beauty and therefore also enjoying intimacy with creation. The other thing is just sort of ugliness. I think one of the problems we've got in sort of 21st century Britain is just how ugly some things can be. You know, sometimes the built environment in which we live and work is just ugly, and it's not very good for intimacy with creation because it doesn't do anything to you. Sometimes, and this is a little bit of a sort of, I don't know, bee in my bonnet, our church buildings are an example of that. So functional, so ugly, that actually they don't really do anything for our spirits. They don't encourage us to enjoy intimacy with creation. They don't encourage us to praise God, because to be honest, we could also be in the local, I don't know, DVLA office, you know, or the local supermarket, in the sense of how little effort there has been to create beauty and to appreciate beauty. Now, I'm not saying that the first thing you should do as a response to this is sort of knock down your church building and build a small mini cathedral. But I do want you to think about, you know, just how are we helping people appreciate beauty? Are we stopping people from appreciating beauty? Sometimes because we just don't think that beauty matters. I'm going to preach at a wedding tomorrow in Oxford, and they recently refurbished their church, and they got somebody to do it really beautifully. And they could have saved a lot of money by not. But some people in that church thought it was worth doing it really well. It was worth giving people a chance to walk into that building and appreciate beauty. And I'm very glad that they did. And sometimes one of the ways, yes, in which we sort of block intimacy with creation is just by surrounding ourselves with ugliness in objects and buildings. And I think it's just worth naming that today. The other thing we do is we don't help ourselves by not appreciating beauty. We also don't help ourselves just by not creating beauty. I think there's two great contexts in which all of us can be involved in creating beauty, by creating other people and by creating other things. And again, I just think sometimes we don't see that as part of our job, to be involved in either parenting your own biological children or spiritually parenting, discipling the next generation, or mentoring younger people in a secular context. Those are all ways in which we can be involved in creating other people, in creating beauty in the next generation. I think sometimes, again, Christians can just sort of sometimes give an impression that the only thing that's worth doing with your spare time is evangelism. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be involved in evangelism, when actually one of the things we are wired to do is create beautiful things. We had the great privilege, Elaine and myself, I think it was yesterday or the day before, being given just some beautiful little postcards painted by one of you. It was just beautiful to see somebody taking the time to create something beautiful. And at one level you could say, well, that's lovely for her, but it wasn't just lovely for her, it was lovely now for me and Elaine. And one of the things we can do in creating beautiful things is passing on beauty to other people, helping other people appreciate beauty too, helping other people enjoy intimacy with creation. So we don't help ourselves so often by not giving ourselves the time and the opportunities to appreciate beauty, and also not giving ourselves the time and the opportunities to create beauty. You know the pattern now, don't you, of these seminars? We're going to get practical now. How can we change that? How can we enjoy intimacy with creation? How can we learn to enjoy beauty appreciation and beauty creation? And in many ways, the answers are obvious, just the sort of the opposite of what we've just been looking at. Learning to enjoy beauty appreciation. We need to expose ourselves to beauty, and we need to allow beauty to boomerang. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a second. First of all, we need to expose ourselves to beauty. And there are so many ways we can do that. And our circumstances and our resources and our personalities will mean that different things work for different people. You can join the National Trust. There we are, a little plug. You can buy a plant and look after it. You can buy a beautiful picture and put it on your wall at home. You can listen to music. You can watch the cricket. You can walk in the park. There's just so many ways of exposing yourself to beauty in so many different forms. And I wonder if one of the things we need to be doing each day is just thinking, how am I going to expose myself to beauty today? One of the ways we might want to review the day is, you know, what did I see that was beautiful today? What did I experience that was beautiful today? We sometimes become quite beauty deprived, and I think we need to find small little practical ways of exposing ourselves to beauty and appreciating beauty more and more. I don't know about you, but during one of the lockdowns, the lockdowns were all quite hard, but one of the good things about the lockdowns was it did make me go out on a walk for an hour a day. And can you remember how sort of religiously you got your full hour because somehow you thought there was a drone that was following you and was monitoring it? But it was just really good for me to spend not just an hour outside appreciating beauty, but to actually go seeking beauty in the middle of a city. And I discovered so many beautiful places near my house at the centre of a city. You know, I can remember the week that I discovered, you know, pretty early on in the lockdowns, you know, just one of the streets nearby, all the cherry trees were in blossom. It was just so incredibly beautiful. And how, you know, the green patches in the city, which you tend to ignore so often, were all being massively explored. And we were appreciating beauty. We need to again, plan in beauty appreciation to our lives. And then we need to allow that beauty to boomerang. We need to allow that beauty to boomerang. And this idea comes from a fellow pastor out in the States, Steve DeWitt. And he just writes this, which is so true, well, should be true, when we experience beauty in whatever shape or form. He writes, beauty boomerangs from God into created beauty, then through the senses and soul of the image bearer, and finally back to God with praise and glory. I hope you've had that experience of just being wowed by beauty, and then that beauty pointing you to the Creator, and then that beauty fueling your praise to the Creator. That's what I love about getting up on home as the before dawn and walking out to the East Coast and watching the sunrise. It's such a beautiful spiritual experience. It's the best quiet time that I have at any time of the year, because you're just being wowed by the beauty of the sun, the smells, the birdsong, everything. And it's just instinctive to praise the God behind it all. Every year I stand on one of the high points in Herm and I just recite these verses, say these verses. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the end of the world. And usually by the time of the end of those verses, the tears are running down, because it is just so stunningly beautiful. And all the beauty I can see all around me, that I can smell, that I can hear, that I can feel, that I can touch. Oh, it's just a small little picture, small little indication of how beautiful the God behind it all is. Are you giving yourself those moments? I don't know where it would be for you, by the sea, on top of a mountain. I don't know where, but making sure you have those beauty appreciation moments, I think, is key for your spiritual health. Loads of secular books being written about how important it is for your mental and your physical and your emotional health. All true, but I want to say even more important for your spiritual health, to appreciate beauty, to be able to sort of say these words as you experience the truth of them. We need to learn to enjoy beauty appreciation. And it's probably just worth saying, you know, we all wire differently. Some of us do that instinctively. Some of us, it will be natural beauty that really gets us. Some of us, it will be something else entirely. You know, I'm amazed that, you know, that some people can see the beauty in rugby. But, you know, they'll say, oh, just beautiful how they do it. I'm just thinking, no, it isn't. But just, you know, what helps you appreciate beauty? And then let it boomerang. Boomerang back in praise to God. So we need to learn to enjoy beauty appreciation. We also need to learn to enjoy beauty creation. And we need to get on with making people and making things. And it's at this point, probably some of you are sitting there thinking, I thought you said this seminar series was not about sex. And here we are talking about making people. Can I have my money back? Well, you haven't paid me any money, so you can't get it back. What am I talking about? Well, obviously, sex and parenthood is one way that some of us are involved in beauty creation. We've created beautiful images of God in our children. And praise God for that. And enjoy that aspect of beauty creation. You have made something of beauty. An image bearer of the Creator himself. But that's not the only way in which you are making people, and it's not the only way to be involved in making people. So some of us will be involved in making people in teaching in schools. Some of us will be involved in making people in teaching kids at our church's Sunday school, in mentoring people at work, in discipling younger Christians at church, in supporting the parents in our local church. All of us, I hope, are involved in some shape or form in parenting. Parenting is not just for those who can have their own biological children. To illustrate this, let me tell you a story from my life. There's a sort of unhelpful gender stereotype out there that women who can't have children really struggle with it, but men who can't have children don't. Absolute lie, if you've ever fallen for it. And I can remember one point when some of the sort of the generation of students I'd worked with when I was in my sort of 20s and 30s started to have kids. And I can remember just really feeling the pain of not being able to have my own children and not be able to be involved in that aspect of beauty creation, that aspect of human life. And I can remember in particular just one parent coming to church with their newborn and, you know, everybody having that conversation about, you know, don't they look exactly like their mum, dad? And the dad sort of came in like that sort of scene out of The Lion King, literally holding his child up. It was a little over the top. And I found it really difficult. I went away that evening just in tears because I thought, this is something I'm never going to be expecting. I'm never going to hear those words. You know, doesn't he look just like ... you? And then later on that summer, in God's grace and kindness to me, I was having a conversation with somebody who had been on a summer camp, and they had worked with somebody, and they said, I worked with somebody, and then I knew that you had discipled them. And I remember saying, why? He said, well, they were just like you. And what he'd seen was some spiritual DNA that had been passed on from me to this younger Christian I discipled. And I sort of said, Was it all good? He said, well, you know, a bit of a mix, but yeah, largely good. But it was just that beautiful moment of, you know, I'm not going to leave behind a biological family tree. And that's painful, and some of you know that pain. But it doesn't mean you don't leave behind, that you can't leave behind a spiritual family tree. We're all involved in the work of making people, biologically, spiritually. And one of the best ways we can enjoy intimacy with creation is getting involved in serving the next generation and making sure that we are leaving a spiritual inheritance, our spiritual DNA, and behind when we go to glory. So learning to enjoy beauty creation involves making people in a whole variety of different ways. It also involves making things. Being human is to be creative, isn't it? It just comes naturally to us, and that shouldn't surprise us because we were created in the image of a creator. And it's not a surprise that one of the aspects of being in his image is that we just create. We can't stop ourselves creating things. That'll be different things for different people in this room, but we can't stop ourselves from being creative. And we need to learn to enjoy that and to see that as part of God's good plans and purposes for our lives. And we can do that in a whole host of different ways. So some of us would do that in making a home or a meal. Some of us would do that in planting a church. Others in planting trees. Some of us would do that in designing an app. Others will do that in designing a garden. Some of us would do that in throwing a pot on a potter's wheel. Some of us will do that in throwing a cricket ball. Whole host of different ways in which we can be involved in creating beauty in the here and now. All in obedience to that first command. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. How are you going to obey that command today? How are you planning on, how can you obey that command today? And I suspect for a lot of us, as we've already been trying to do in this seminar, it means broadening our vision of what that looks like. And something that was so helpful for me in broadening my vision of what this looks like is the late, great Tim Keller. He's written a wonderful book on work, and this is him sort of explaining what that verse looks like in practice in a whole host of different ways. It is rearranging the raw material of God's creation in such a way that it helps the world in general and people in particular thrive and flourish. This pattern is found in all kinds of work, Farming takes the physical material of soil and seed and produces food. Music takes the physics of sound and rearranges it into something beautiful and thrilling that brings meaning to life. When we take fabric and make a piece of clothing, when we push a broom and clean up a room, when we use technology to harness the forces of electricity, when we take an unformed, naive human mind and teach it a subject, when we teach a couple how to resolve their relational disputes, when we take simple materials and turn them into a poignant work of art, we are continuing God's work of forming, filling, and subduing. Isn't that just a wonderful broad range and picture of all the different ways, or some of the different ways, that point us to all the different ways we can be involved in creating beauty and appreciating it as a result? Really important that we grasp a much bigger vision of what that looks like and of what we're talking about as we talk about intimacy with creation this morning. Why is all this so important? Why is all of this so important? Well, again, think of Genesis 1, verse 28. It's what we were created to do. This is what being human is all about. This is the job God has given us to do. Appreciate beauty, create beauty. This is our job. And so in some ways, that should just in some ways answer that question. God's given us this to do. That's how important it is. But let me just give you a sort of final encouragement that I just love. And I think it is the spiritual benefit of it. It's back to this idea of beauty boomeranging. Gerald Manley Hopkins was a Roman Catholic priest and a poet. His poetry is so helpful for me. Well, actually, his poetry is just another example of how God uses things to create intimacy, because he's a Christian and it increases my intimacy with God. He was somebody who struggled with his sexuality, and reading his poetry increases my intimacy with myself, helps me to understand myself. His poetry increases my intimacy with others, because I read Gerry Manley Hopkins' poetry and I think, you get me. And his poetry, of course, is a creative act that constantly points readers to creation and grow our appreciation of the beauty in it. So Gerald Manley Hopkins, brilliant at helping fill my intimacy deficits. Might be helpful for some of you. Others of you would read one of his poems and think, what was Ed Shaw on about? But try him if you dare. But I just love this little sentence that just helps us to see the link between intimacy with creation and intimacy with God. I do not think I have seen anything more beautiful than the bluebell I have been looking at. I know the beauty of our Lord by it. I love the exercise, just somebody sitting down and admiring a bluebell. Don't know the last time you did that. When I was on Hermon May, there were just banks of bluebells out. And just the exercise is just focusing in on one of them and seeing the beauty, the ornate beauty of a bluebell. The beautiful colour and just how intricate it is. And then thinking, the God who created this bluebell, the Lord Jesus who is involved in the creation of the world in which this bluebell has sprung from, is even more beautiful than this. Intimacy with creation, intimacy with one bluebell, leading to a greater appreciation, a greater intimacy with the God who created all things, including bluebells. Now we're going to pause at this moment. That is intimacy with creation, sort of on speed. Tried to get through a lot of material, haven't we, over these mornings, and that is a lot of stuff. You might have questions. We'll have a question time in the moment on this morning and on other things too. But I just want to sort of land our time together quite practically by just talking about what I call an intimacy audit. And I go into more details in the book, but I want to sort of help you to sort of ground this and to see how useful these four seminars could be in your daily life in an ongoing way. And one of the things I'm wanting to urge myself and others, you to do, is regularly to sit down and have a bit of an intimacy audit. Perhaps particularly when things are going wrong in some way, just to sort of see how you could get things back on an even keel. or you know, over the summer, as often for many people in this room, you do have a bit of a break and there is a chance for a bit of a reset to sit down and think, okay, how am I doing in these four areas? You know, how am I doing at intimacy with God? What are the things that are blocking that? How could I enjoy it more? When it comes to intimacy with myself, intimacy with others, intimacy in creation, what are the things that are stopping me from enjoying those things? What are the small habits, things I could start doing that would get me enjoying intimacy in each of these four areas? As I came to the end of writing the book in Cambridge last June, I just basically spent a couple of days doing an intimacy audit on myself at the end. And it was a really good thing to do, and I need to do it again now that a year has passed, and just work out what are the areas in which intimacy with God is happening, what are the areas in which I really need to refill what is an increasing intimacy deficit. And actually just being here this week has been just a good little reminder of ways in which intimacy is healthy, ways in which it's less healthy in my life today. It's very easy, isn't it, to enjoy intimacy with others at Keswick. I've had a fantastic time staying with a family and enjoying the company of other people from my church family who are here at Keswick. And so intimacy with others, it feels as if it's not much of a deficit there at the moment. But because I've just basically been here and booze and my house, it's, you know, intimacy with creation, I need to work on that. And then just when things are going wrong, I found it so helpful, particularly when I'm in danger of catastrophizing. I don't know if you ever fall into that trap. You know, everything's going wrong. I can't believe I've got myself into this muddle. God can't be good because I'm feeling this again. I've done that again. Actually, so often I find it really helpful to come back to this and think, actually, you know, the reason things are going wrong, Ed, is you're not living the life that God intended you to live. And it's been a long time since you've really prayed to him. It's been a long time since you've really reflected and praised him for the person he's made you to be. It's a long time since you actually answered the question, how are you, honestly, with a friend. It's been a long time since you went out on a walk in the country and enjoyed intimacy with creation. One of the dangers, isn't it, of any conference, any convention, is that we enjoy some seminars, but they don't impact our lives. I want to urge you to do an intimacy deficit so that it does impact your life. And more details about how to do that. Yeah, in the book. But for now, and we've got a bit more time deliberately, I want you to ponder these questions, and then after 2 or 3 minutes, we'll move into a question time. That can be about today, or it can be about any of the days or the times we spent together this week. But for now, a bit of time being un-British, talking to the people near you, unless you want to just be on your own. If that's the case, body language, use it.
And time for some questions.
Thank you very much for all the talks, by the way, Ed. I was just going to ask, I've often heard the phrase, everyone is an artist until the rent is due. How do we find time and motivation to create when we feel exhausted by work and life in general?
Yeah, thank you. It's trying to think of what are the free bit, the free, what experiences of beauty are free, because there are some that are really pricey, aren't they? So, you know, you can spend a lot of money enjoying beauty in music at a concert. You can also find it for free. You can spend money on National Trust membership, or you can just walk to the local park. And I think, you know, at different stages of life, we probably need to access beauty in different ways. And different personality and circumstances will mean that, you know, we do just, you know, I'll say something's incredibly beautiful and you'll be thinking, yeah. You know, opera, I'm in tears with somebody at the opera because they just think it's so beautiful, and I'm in tears because I'm thinking, I want to get out of here. the wonderful thing about beauty is I think we've got to find ways of, some of us will have to find ways of accessing it cheap. But also, I think the other thing is, we as Christians should be involved in helping people in society who cannot access beauty. Why were Christians involved in, you know, the founding of the National Trust and, you know, other organizations like that? Because they saw that it was really important for people's health in every way, including their spiritual health, to enjoy beauty. So, you know, we should be campaigning for that green space in our city to be saved as Christians. We should be campaigning for the built environment to look better. And we should be campaigning for a housing in the UK to actually be beautiful rather than just functional, I think. So, you know, if, let's say, you were trained to be an architect, that would be a way to give your life to actually building beautiful buildings that actually point people to a beautiful creator. Thank you.
Hello. Now, this is something I haven't really kind of understood, so maybe you can shed some light on it. But there's several hobbies in my life that enable me to be really, really creative. And I've loved ever since I was a kid and still kind of find pleasure in those. But sometimes I have this kind of imposture kind of feeling of, is this selfish? You know, because I'm immersing myself in this thing or this hobby or this thing that I love doing. And sometimes I struggle with the balance of God has given me this pleasure and this real ability to be creative and I love this, but also thinking this feels kind of selfish because there's other people in my life that don't experience this. So I don't know. Sometimes I don't know how to navigate that balance.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yes, yeah, and I don't want, you know, I don't want to be this, don't want this seminar to be sort of, yeah, so it's used to sort of stop you from keeping to other responsibilities. You know, you're up doing whatever it is, and, you know, to other people in your life, I have no time for you today because I'm appreciating beauty, and, you know, that sort of thing, you know. I think that's when the all four come in useful, and I think, you know, the healthiest things in life allow you to do all four. And, you know, so for instance, you know, in different ways. So, I'm trying to think of an example. So, yeah, me swimming off the coast of Herm clearly sort of ticks the intimacy with God box. Into myself actually really ticks that as well. There's that wonderful experience of, you know, when you have nearly frozen to death, you come out, you know what I mean? There's just that wonderful feeling at one with and alive with your body, which is just fantastic. Intimacy creation massively ticks that box. Intimacy with others, actually, it doesn't particularly tick that box, but generally it's a healthy thing to do. So I think I would be sort of making sure, does it tick as many of these boxes as possible? But some of the things we do will be quite, you know, particularly for the introverts in the room, some of the things we do will be, you know, by ourselves. And then the question to ask is, are we just spending time with ourselves, you know, picking up your concern because it's just, we're just basically being selfish? That is wrong, that's not Christian. But am I actually spending some time with myself? Am I doing this hobby, which is actually part of God's recreating of me, and it's giving me a break and a rest and the time to build up resources, which I am then going to go and spend in serving others. And if you're at the introvert end of the spectrum, you know how important that is for you to be able to serve God in those other contexts of your life when you're in a room full of people. So I think, yeah, it's just, it is going to be different for different people. We need to watch selfishness. We need to see what we perhaps need to prioritize the activities that tick as many boxes as possible, but recognize that just sometimes, yeah, actually, it might look selfish, but we can be. You know, when I persuade myself to have a day off, one of the things I'm doing is I'm having this day off to allow God to recreate me so I can continue to serve other people. It's not a selfish thing. And sometimes some of our hobbies might look selfish, but actually thinking, no, this is about me giving myself the resources to serve my family, my church family, this world better. Does that help? Thank you.
So you talked this morning about leaving behind a spiritual family tree and the pain for those not having a biological family. As someone who has fortunately been blessed with a family, how can I be encouraging those in my church family who haven't, and seek to involve them in a way that isn't patronising or painful?
Yeah, thank you. Really helpful, sensitive question. And of course, it will look different for different people because there'll be different sensitivities. But what I love, for instance, around, you know, the people that have asked me to be godparents to their children. I've got 13 godchildren. You know, that's been one way of them doing that. You know, of saying, actually, we'd love you to stay involved in our lives. We'd love you to have a role in our child's life. And that role looks different, you know, with different children at different ages and stages. But that's just been a beautiful way of doing that. All the people that, you know, are encouraging, you know, and it doesn't need to be formalized as a sort of godfather, godchildren thing. You know, just, you know, at my church, I just know we just got parents who are just well aware that they need help. And actually, they ask for help. You know, the parents who ask for your input on how they're parenting, or the parents that welcome your involvement in the life of their children because they know, and all the surveys show that one of the key things for one of the key testimonies of people who have grown up in churches, one of the key testimonies about how they have become Christians or stayed Christians has been, is all the surveys say, the involvement of other adults in their life, other people who are being like Jesus. And, you know, parents, wise parents in this room, you know, get other adults involved in the life of your children because they will be able to say and do things that you can't do. And I think that all of that aside, the best thing is just to initiate conversation, just say, I really need your help. That's the other thing, is that there's a danger, isn't there? And you've highlighted the danger in the sense of asking your question. There's a danger of single people feeling the married people are sort of, I'm going to sort of try and help you, when actually the best thing that parents have done involving me is that we really need your help. This is a mutual thing. It's a two-way thing. That's really important.
Yeah, and if I could just add something there, Ed, that
yeah.
Understanding one another, you know, so I've, as a single person, have got lots of friends who have shared their children with me. They haven't treated me just as a convenient babysitter or childminder. It's a genuine involvement in life. But equally, I know other friends who are single that actually, they're not interested, you know. So it's actually about learning one another and what is going to be of mutual benefit to one another. But sometimes that involves the risky question, the risky conversation where you're not sure just quite how it's going to go. But here we go, another question here.
Yeah, thank you. Mine's not a question, actually. I put my hand up because I was going to share this yesterday because it really links in with yesterday. But actually, on the back of the last question, there is a book in the bookshop called Praying Through Infertility, which actually my husband and I here today have been contributors to, which isn't what I was going to share, but might actually help the lady that asked the question, because it's been written by lots of people who haven't been able to have children and might actually be very illuminating for people who have, to really be able to come alongside people and understand what that's like and what is helpful. But that isn't what I was going to say, but it is similar to what I wanted to say. But it was just to share with Ed and encourage everybody here today that my husband and I have practiced that exercise of becoming vulnerable, like you shared yesterday, Ed, that was one of the sort of the ways of building powerful relationships, that we have noticed a difference, that when we lived in place A, we were not vulnerable and we utterly hid this secret of really struggling to conceive and have a family. And as a result of that, our friendships were enjoyable, but they were not deep. And then we moved and we relocated due to a job, thankfully, by the grace of God. And when we arrived in place B, we took the active decision to try something different and be vulnerable and be open. And from the word go, we shared with our new forming friendships, we can't have this is who we are, we can't have children, the pain of that, but also the richness of that. And it's scary, everybody. It is utterly terrifying being that vulnerable. But the depth of friendship we have now in place B compared to in place A is extraordinary, and we are living in a land of plenty. So I just want to encourage you all, what Ed has shared, put it into practice because it works.
Yeah, thank you. Vulnerability.
Brilliant, thank you.
Vulnerability is the quickest route to intimacy, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. This isn't a question either, but I was I was touched by the man asking about his hobby, because I think one of the things I would want to say is give that hobby to God. Because if you think of Eric Liddell, he said, God made me to be a runner. I will run for him. And sometimes God has given us a particular interest or a particular gift and ability. And we feel selfish doing that, because we feel we should be doing other things, that, you know, we should be evangelizing, or we should be doing all sorts of other important things. Actually, God made us who we are for a reason. If we give to him our gifts and our interests, our personality and everything else, and give it totally to him and say, Lord, this is who you've made me to be. This is what you've made me interested in. please would you take this and use it? If it's too much, show me where it's meant to be going. And if it's too little, just enhance that.
Brilliant. We need to pause there. Thank you. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for those comments. What I'll do sort of at the end is I will sort of head out aside and sort of if there are other questions you've got. Just in sort of closing, I've recommended my book. The other book that's really sort of helped me in this field, the sort of stuff we've been doing this morning, as in this was a life-transforming book, would be Julian Hardiman's Maximum Life. So if a lot of this morning has been new to you and you think, I need to check this up, I need to explore it more, I really, really recommend his book, Maximum Life, which is over there on the bookstore. Thank you so much.